It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the U.S. role in the world according to President Barack Obama. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In a major speech to the graduating class of the West Point Military Academy, President Obama outlined the major contours and objectives of his foreign policy. Most analysts say that it was a defense of his current policy of restraint. Even as he says that America must always lead on the world stage, President Obama never ceases to remind that he was elected in part to wind down the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and not get the country entangled in new military adventures.
But U.S. military action cannot be the only or even primary component of our leadership in every instance. Just because we have the best hammer does not mean that every problem is a nail.
But many opposition Republicans and Democrats alike say this is a strawman argument or a misrepresentation of his critics' views, which allows President Obama to easily dismiss them. Critics on both the right and the left who advocate a more robust foreign policy, whether on Syria, Iraq, or vis-a-vis Russian aggression in Ukraine, do not necessarily advocate boots on the ground, but believe that the United States can and should provide military support or threaten the use of force, even in conjunction with allies. U.S. policy towards Syria illustrates what many say is President Obama's oversimplification of options. Here's what he had to say at West Point.
As frustrating as it is, there are no easy answers there. No military solution that can eliminate the terrible suffering anytime soon. As president, I made a decision that we should not put American troops into the middle of this increasingly sectarian war. And I believe that is the right decision. But that does not mean we shouldn't help the Syrian people stand up against a dictator who bombs and starves his own people.
President Obama said he did not want to send troops to Syria, but no one, not the Syrian rebel opposition, nor the many Democrats and Republicans who advocated sending defensive weapons to the rebels to defend themselves against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's onslaughts, advocated sending U.S. troops. Many of President Obama's supporters have criticized him for suggesting that the only alternative to his policies is the unilateral use of military force. President Obama underscored that the most direct threat to America at home and abroad remains terrorism. Again, on this point, he rejected a strategy that involves invading every country that harbors terrorist networks. Again, his critics took issue with that characterization, since few voices have advocated such a strategy. President Obama stressed the importance of non-military options in addressing the world's challenges, as well as collective action. He cited the unified approach by the so-called P5+1 to bring Iran to the negotiating table over its nuclear program. Well, with us to discuss President Obama's take on the U.S. role in the world are two distinguished foreign policy analysts. Kim Holmes is a distinguished fellow and former vice president for foreign and defense policy at the Heritage Foundation. That's a conservative think tank based here in Washington. He also served as assistant secretary of state for international organization affairs under former President George W. Bush. He's the author of the recently published book, Rebound, Getting America Back to Great. And Brian Katulis, he's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. That's a progressive think tank based here in Washington. His work focuses on U.S. national security policy in the Middle East and South Asia. Brian has served as a consultant to numerous U.S. government agencies in more than 25 countries. He's the co-author of The Prosperity Agenda, a book on U.S. national security published in 2008. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, Kim Holmes from the Heritage Foundation, let me begin with you to get your takeaway from President Obama's address at the West Point Military Academy. What did you take away from his foreign policy objectives?
Well, he's obviously been experiencing a lot of criticism, not only over Syria, over Iran, what to do about Russia. He was clearly trying to respond to that. But as you suggested in your introduction, he was creating a number of straw men that he was knocking down left and right. in the sense that he was mischaracterizing what many of the critics have been saying about his foreign policy. He was acting as if the only choices we had was either to go to war or be complete isolationist. Those are not only not the strategic options, it's not really what his critics, either from the left or the right, were actually saying about his policy. The main problem is that he seems to be disengaged. He seems to be overly concerned about his domestic policy agenda. He seems to doubt the efficacy and the purpose of American power in the world. And he has a tendency to reduce U.S. leadership to the question of whether or not we go to war or not, when in fact, for most of the Cold War and the post-Cold War era, American leadership was based upon the deterrent capability of our military power, not actually going to war willy-nilly every time something came up. And as a matter of fact, people were not advocating boots on the ground in Syria. They're not advocating a war against Russia over what's happened in Ukraine. What we're talking about is having a coherent strategy where you use or take advantage of the credibility of American power so that you can not only come up with reasonable solutions to problems and start backing, for example, the rebels in Syria early on before the things get so out of control, as they are now in Syria, where there truly are Islamist groups, and so there's not any good options left. We should have gotten involved in that a lot earlier. That was not about going to war. It was not about boots on the ground. And I think the president is just mischaracterizing his critics.
Brian Katulis, do you think that President Obama, to some extent, is mischaracterizing his critics? Is he still in that mode of sort of being the non or antithesis of George W. Bush, whom many criticized as having gone way too far in terms of military action, of getting the United States involved in Iraq, perhaps on false premises? Is that what's going on? How do you see it?
I see it in that way. I think President Obama came to office in 2009 after essentially what were six of the most disastrous years of foreign policy for the United States. And in many ways, the West Point speech we're talking about, the one that President Obama delivered this year, is a perfect bookend to another West Point speech that was delivered in 2002 by George W. Bush. In that speech, and it's important, I think, to articulate this for the broader picture, George W. Bush said that the era of containment, of deterrence, that had been the core of U.S. bipartisan national security policy for decades, literally, since the early 1950s, he said the era of containment is over, that when we have the sorts of threats like al-Qaeda and other things, we're going to have to do the sorts of things like we ended up doing in Iraq. I think most people understand now the 2003 Iraq war was one of the most grievous errors in the United States' history of foreign policy. It ended a policy of dual containment of Iran and Iraq, two very terrible regimes. And ending that policy of dual containment, a coherent strategy, actually helped unleash some of these sectarian and extremist forces that I think the Bush administration later on pragmatically tacked towards trying to clean up the messes there it itself created. But yes, President Obama, I think even in his latest speech, is still stuck in this mode because there were so many problems that were created as a result of the mistakes that were made. And I do agree with what Kim said, is that I think a lot of us analyzing foreign policy wishes that President Obama would lean in a little bit more, that he's overreacted to the, I think, mistakes and the abuses under the Bush administration with his underreactions. And I think that's where the interesting debate is. It's less about analyzing speeches and more really analyzing what is actually done on the ground, how U.S. can use not only military power, but all forms of power, including diplomacy, to persuade others to pull their weight, which I think is key to many of the challenges in Asia, in the Middle East, and other places we'll talk about.
Well, Kim Holmes, do you acknowledge the fact that President Obama is, to some extent, justifiably or not, still reacting to the many years under the Bush administration where many people have criticized President Bush's actions in Iraq? As Brian Katulis said, one could point to those actions as having created some of the problems we're seeing today, the rise of Iran, Iraq not able to govern itself to this day. We're witnessing ISIS, that's the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, now taking over key cities in Iraq.
Regardless of what President Obama may say or think that he was elected to do with respect to winding down wars and the like, his top job is as Commander-in-Chief and President of the United States is to protect the security and interests of the United States now, and not fight old political battles, or particularly to use those arguments and debates about what we did or did not do in the Iraq War to sidestep the issue. We now have to decide what to do, for example, further in Afghanistan, and we seem to be going down the same road of withdrawal in Afghanistan that we did in Iraq. I think with the same kind of consequences in Afghanistan that we're now seeing in Iraq. And so I just think that talking about the political sides of the debate is really beside the point. The point is that what do we do now? And this is where the criticism of his disengaged policy, he seems to have a number of assumptions in the way he operates, not just that George W. Bush did everything wrong and he's going to do the opposite. It's also that he really seems to believe that there's something fundamentally wrong with American power, that in fact it's in the overengagement of the United States in foreign policy and abroad that is really the basic problem. And therefore, I think as a result of that, he thinks we can just walk away from our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he's probably assuming that was the original cause of the problem, and not realize that that actually wasn't the only problem involved. As we're seeing right now in Iraq, the United States left Iraq at the end of George Bush's presidency after the surge in fairly good shape. If we had sustained our commitment there, and if we had done a better job in our status of force agreements and left some troops behind there, I don't think Prime Minister Maliki would have gone as far as he did in saddling up to the Iranians. And then you would have gotten the counter backlash from the Sunnis that you got. I doubt very seriously we'd have the problem in Iraq that we had today. And we weren't talking about continuing the war. We're just talking about keeping some forces there, as presumably we were supposed to do in Afghanistan as well. Regardless of what he thinks politically his purpose was, it's important to deal with the world as it is and with the interests and security of the United States as they are.
Brian Katulis, what about this criticism that President Obama is fashioning foreign policy through a domestic political lens to some extent? He knows that the country is weary of the wars. We're seeing so many veterans come back with injuries or wounds, and so many people have died. To what extent is there some validity to that criticism and try to fashion the policy with respect to U.S. interests?
I think he looks at the world and the challenges that we face through sort of a realistic and pragmatic lens. And I don't think domestic politics is a great consideration because, quite frankly, over the last, I would say, 5-6 years, most of his opponents have been quite inconsistent and incoherent. If you look at the Republican Party today, and I think this was emblematic in the 2012 presidential elections and the campaign that Mitt Romney ran, there has been such disarray and historic disarray amongst Republicans that there really is no cohesive alternative that is politically organized to what President Obama is doing right now. I think when it comes to power, I don't think President Obama is averse to using American power. Quite clearly, we've used it very aggressively against al-Qaeda and got, I think, strong results in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Yemen, and got bin Laden in less than a quarter of the time that the Bush administration wasn't able to get him. I think he's been more judicious in using it more selectively. He didn't get caught up in the sense of we're going to shock and awe the world and bend the will of the world to our power. But I do think, again, I think there's a valid critique that he doesn't engage enough, that his instinct to try to get others in the world to pull their weight, which I think is the right instinct and is very much in line with where most Americans think that U.S. leadership should be about getting others to pull their weight. And I think in some ways he's been a little too reticent to do that. But that said, I mean, in cases like the Ukraine, it's interesting to me that President Obama, I think, has put into place a lot of measures that are heavily dependent on our European allies. And if you saw in his last trip to Europe, the reluctance on some of our closest allies, France and others, to do more, to do that which what we want them to do to help their own self-interest, really hinders his own theory of getting others to pull their weight. So it's not that he's ashamed of U.S. power or anything like this. It's how do we actually have a 21st century, one that's more tied to how the world is today as opposed to how we imagine or dream it might be, because I think the era of cowboy diplomacy we saw in the previous decades clearly did not succeed. The tilt towards pragmatism, I think, in the second half of the Bush administration has been followed on by President Obama, but I think we could be a little bit more forceful in certain instances.
All right. Well, we'll try to illustrate that in a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Kim Holmes. He's Distinguished Fellow and former Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy at the Heritage Foundation. And Brian Katulis. He's a Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. And we're discussing President Obama's foreign policy principles as outlined in a recent address to the graduating class at the West Point Military Academy. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. And please don't be a stranger. Send an email with your feedback to encounter@voanews.com. Well, back to you, Kim Holmes. Let's take a look at U.S. policy towards Syria, since it has been a focus of much criticism. In order to do that, let's hear what President Obama had to say about the use of military force.
First, let me repeat a principle I put forward at the outset of my presidency. The United States will use military force unilaterally, if necessary, when our core interests demand it, when our people are threatened, when our livelihoods are at stake, when the security of our allies is in danger. In these circumstances, we still need to ask tough questions about whether our actions are proportional. International opinion matters. But America should never ask permission to protect our people, our homeland, or our way of life. On the other hand, when issues of global concern do not pose a direct threat to the United States, when such issues are at stake, when crises arise that stir our conscience or push the world in a more dangerous direction, but do not directly threaten us, then the threshold for military action must be higher. In such circumstances, we should not go it alone. Instead, we must mobilize allies and partners to take collective action.
I may be wrong, but it sounds like, of course, Obama's saying on the one hand, we should use force, fine, and one can believe him. And then on the other hand, saying, but we have to be careful not to use force unilaterally. And somehow Syria came to mind. But at the same time, we know that the French were standing by ready. But again, we know President Obama decided to go to Congress. That didn't look positive. And then the deal to get rid of Assad's chemical weapons in return for not striking came to pass. Kim Holmes, what do you think is going on with President Obama in this particular situation?
Well, there's nothing on the face of what he actually said in that statement that is particularly problematic. It's always wise for the President of the United States to be very careful about the use of force and to put conditions on it. And I certainly don't believe that the president is anywhere near a pacifist. I mean, he's shown that in the war on terrorism, he'll use force when he needs to. That is really not the problem. The problem is, with respect to Syria, that he put down a red line and made the threat of force and then went into a political process, basically punted it to the Congress, at the same time that France and, for a while, Britain were saying they actually wanted to go forward with airstrikes. Put it into a political process, and then when the Congress started balking, he used that as an excuse to back down. You would have hoped that the president would have talked to the people of Congress before he actually did this, because there's nothing worse than a president of the United States threatening force and then backing down. I don't care what the political reasons are for it at home, you just don't go there. And that went over very badly. It signaled the United States is uncertain. Our credibility was being questioned by people in the Middle East, and even our allies were raising questions about the constancy of American leadership and diplomacy. As far as the question of getting others to help us, yeah, I think that we've always wanted the allies in Europe to do more, for them to carry the burden of the collective defense. That's something that is bipartisan. But you can't expect the allies to do more as a way of compensating for us doing less. That's not the way leadership works. America's leadership role was always based upon the idea that we would do what others could not do themselves. That's in terms of the military power that we provided, the deterrent power of our capability, plus the diplomacy behind that. We never saw our leadership as a way of, well, you just do what we do or what we can't do, and we'll kind of have a collective approach to this. That's not what U.S. leadership is about. And frankly, even though the Europeans don't want to spend more on defense, for example, they are telling us privately they are concerned that American power and leadership is drifting because they don't know where we stand.
Turning to you, Brian Katulis, the reason I used this particular actuality is because I think it is important, and I think Syria illustrates a conundrum. It illustrates that you have a case where perhaps the threat of the use of force or even providing some weaponry to the moderate opposition, which many Democrats and some of his own cabinet officials recommended early on, maybe could have made a difference. And also, what about the point that Kim Holmes makes, that our inaction on Syria signals a weakness to others around the world, that we don't do as we say?
Well, first, on what is known as the non-strike event of last year, I was visiting with a very senior Israeli official who said they were very pleased with how President Obama used the threat of force there. And in fact, again, the situation is awful on a humanitarian basis. The civil war continues. But his main point was this, is that you had one of the largest dangerous chemical weapons arsenals. And he admitted, you know, it's not fully eliminated, but the vast majority of it is on the way out. And that was a tangible result of the threat of force. So I think there are mixed interpretations of this. And I think certainly the complaints when I go to the Gulf region and talk to friends in Saudi Arabia and other places, they quite clearly would be happy for the U.S. to use our own military force in their own battles. But there have been some results achieved, still modest but important. And I think from the Israeli perspective, which is our strongest partner in the region, hearing that endorsement, I think, was very important. The second thing is that in terms of the humanitarian catastrophe, we still are leading, and leading even more than many of these oil-rich Gulf countries are. The United States taxpayers are the largest contributors to that. That all said, the situation in Syria and quite clearly the recent events of Iraq are very much interlinked. And in my view, represent a test of whether we can come together as a nation here in the United States, but then also with partners in the region, because this should serve as a wake-up call for everybody. And the old debates of Iraq, of even whether we should have gone into Iraq or whether the surge worked, what's done is done. We are where we are right now. And I think the practical question is the United States, I think, needs to lean in and do more on both fronts in Syria and Iraq. How do you do it in such a way that contributes to stability rather than furthers a sectarian civil war in both of these countries and increases the possibility of a regional war? I think a more active engagement, that's where a very, I think, important discussion needs to be had as a country, and doing that sort of together would be a good thing.
Indeed. Well, just quickly to follow up is that, of course, not just Republicans like Senator John McCain, but many Democrats and former White House advisors on Syria have advocated that more military support for the moderate opposition early on, and even now, you know, would have prevented the jihadis who now are very much entrenched in Syria and now, of course, in Iraq, that would have prevented the very situation that President Obama said he wanted to deter. This is, again, a point of argument. So back to you, Kim Holmes, as we conclude, to take a look at where we are today. We need to go forward. And President Obama did articulate the need for more counterterrorism, a collective action. He proposed a counterterrorism fund, presumably to help deter the very threats we're seeing in Iraq, the rise of al-Qaeda affiliates, not just there, but even in West Africa, and of course in Northern Africa. So how do you see this proposal?
Well, I agree very much with Brian in the sense that we need to find some kind of a consensus on a way forward. What's done is done. We've got our debates. We've got our politics. But we're facing a very serious situation, not just that Iraq is unraveling. That could actually devolve into a regional war involving Iran, possibly Turkey. Certainly Syria is already part of the front there. And with Saudi Arabia and others getting into a Shia-Sunni war, this could be extremely dangerous. And so we have to get serious about what we do about that. If that requires more military assistance to Iraq, if it means talking to Maliki and telling them that he needs to cool it and start doing some things differently, maybe even some air support if necessary. That's a military decision that has to be made. Regardless of the mistakes that anybody have made, President Bush or President Obama, I just think we need a course correction that we can all agree on. And I think that it means that we have to accept the fact that American leadership is really necessary for these crises. It doesn't mean that we go to war automatically. We put boots on the ground. But we have to be constant and we have to be engaged from the get-go on a daily basis. Second of all, we can't let our military power wane. Unfortunately, we have an attitude now because there's so much unpopularity with the wars over the last 10 years that it's assumed that if you spend more on tanks and airplanes, that somehow that's going to lead you into a war. That is not the way we thought about military power for 60 or 70 years. This is the way we need to understand that we must have the options to use force, but force doesn't necessarily have to be the first option. And thirdly, we have to reassure our allies that we're there with them, and that whatever mistakes have been made, whatever wavering we've done on decisions, whether it's Syria or anything else, we've sort of learned our lesson. American people are coming behind Republicans and Democrats, and we're making a course correction. And then if we can just agree on that, I think that perhaps we can at least keep some of these crises from spinning further out of control.
Well, the last word to you, Brian Katulis. Do you think a course correction is needed, as Kim Holmes has articulated? And once again, going back to whether Syria or Iraq, Iran, we have Bashar al-Assad. Even if he looks stable vis-a-vis the jihadist extremists who have infiltrated, he still is a magnet for them. So somehow, notwithstanding President Obama's reluctance, something needs to be done. with regard to Syria and Assad himself as the magnet for these terrorists. But as well, we're seeing, as I said, the rise of al-Qaeda in Iraq and in so many other places, notwithstanding President Obama's courageous taking out of Osama bin Laden and other drone strikes that some people criticize, of course, because of the collateral damage. But how do you see going forward?
Well, I think first in the Middle East, we have to recognize that the Middle East has entered what will likely be a prolonged period of transformation. It didn't only begin with the Iraq War. You know, these forces, the demographic and social changes that are underway, I think will continue for a long time. And since the Arab uprisings of 2011, what we've seen is this intense competition for power within the region. Some of it is Shia versus Sunni, Iran versus Saudi Arabia. But a good part of it is also the intra-Sunni fight, countries like Saudi Arabia and others fighting bitterly over Egypt. So the whole landscape that we've known for decades, especially since 1979, is changing. And we need to stay engaged as a leader. I agree with Kim on this. But the nature of that leadership has got to change. We've relied so heavily on a military footprint and intelligence footprint. And I think that needs to stay. But what we lack right now is a broader statecraft approach to this part of the world and to the broader world. So I agree with the general contours of what Kim offers here. But I think it's going to be a real challenge in this current domestic environment, selling this to the American public, which is why I think working together is going to be essential in the next phase.
Indeed. Well, I'll just put my 2 cents worth in. No question, we need collective action with our allies. But you mentioned statecraft. We need not just military action or military support against some of these extremist groups, whether in Nigeria or Mali or Somalia or Yemen or Iraq, but also we need to work on these countries' governance, because sometimes, whether it's economic inequalities or lack of good governance, too much corruption, we need to work on those matters as well. So a discussion that will continue, but I'm afraid for now that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Kim Holmes. He's Distinguished Fellow and former Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy at the Heritage Foundation, and Brian Katulis, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Audrius Regis. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.
Encounter on The Voice of America. Encounter on The Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.